Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello everyone, Charles Watts here. Welcome back to Inside Arsenal, and it is time for Inside Arsenal Extra Time. It feels like ages since we've done one of these, James. It feels like an awful lot of things have happened, including, of course, you getting a ring on that finger. How is life as a happily married man?
Yeah, it's not currently on. It doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit.
We've had it sized twice. I have very warm hands. I'm very good at making pasta for that reason. Or am I can't remember what I'm good at. But yeah, my hands get too warm. Married life is wonderful so far. Not all gone pretty well. I mean, Arsenal are 3 of 3 since I got married. I don't want to bore people with too many tales about my wonderful wedding day. What I will say is it went so brilliantly, and then the lights come up at just gone midnight or whatever. Everyone's clearing out and someone comes and gives me my phone back, because of course it's important to be in the moment. Phone on, immediately onto the BBC Sport website. And, you know, I don't want to oversell this in case my wife watches it, but oh, there's a lovely little end to the evening to see Arsenal 2, Wolverhampton Wanderers 0. Great, great weekend all around. And then while I was on a little mini moon, I was getting in we went out for a very nice dinner in Florence, and I was getting pings all the time going, Hannah, it's 3-0 to Arsenal now, actually. Oh, it's 4-0. Yeah, no, Chelsea 4-0 down now. Yeah. So it's been pretty good.
Yeah, it's all gone well since you kind of went away. I was trying to think, when was the last time we caught up? It was when I was in Munich, wasn't it? It was the day after the Munich game, was the last show we did. Yeah, it was all doom and gloom at that point, wasn't it? I was looking out of a window,
we're back.
Snow falling in Munich as talking to it, trying to reflect on that Champions League defeat. But fair play to them, they've responded, because it could have gone a very different way, couldn't it, after the Villa defeat and then going out to Bayern. It was the season was kind of teetering, wasn't it? It could have ended very unhappily, but they've certainly given themselves a chance now, and I suppose that's pretty much all they could do at that point. We'll talk about Spurs briefly later on in this show, because obviously it's kind of old now, so there's other stuff to talk about. But I definitely wanted to touch on the North London derby and get your thoughts on that. And there's plenty of other stuff for us to get cracking on. But what have you been up to since you got back to work? Oh, actually, no, you were speaking of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, actually, weren't you? They've got a big game today, Marseille. What was all that about?
Yeah, massive game. I mean, I have been wanting to, obviously, like everyone that's been on the Arsenal beat, I've been wanting to speak to Oba for years. And I have to say, I mean, you can read the piece on cbssports.com. I have to say, by the time I came to sort of speak to him, the Arsenal story didn't seem that relevant, because he's just in this amazing headspace right now, in this amazing run of form with Marseille. 8 goals, 14 assists in Liga, and top scorer in the Europa League. I mean, there are some little Arsenal tidbits which I can't quite share yet. They're hidden away, tucked in the back pocket. Some lovely stuff he had to say about Bukayo Saka that I'm certain will see the light of day one day. But yeah, it's I mean, you well know from covering Oba, he's someone that wears his heart on his sleeve and is not the best at hiding his emotions. And I think after everything he's been through with Arsenal and, you know, whatever you think of that, but also Barcelona doing great work for them and then being turfed out, Chelsea having about 7 days with the manager that wanted to hire him. It's really fun, I think, for Aubameyang to be back there. Like he says, Marseille is this mad city, fire in the stadium, sometimes literally fire in the stadium. And I think that it, you know, as well, it's just the perfect environment for him, somewhere like that. I mean, he is a natural showman, and I think the Velodrome is one of the great arenas for him to show that quality. So yeah, do please give it a read, and you'll be hearing some more about from Oba about Arsenal and Bukayo Saka one day.
Okay, good. I'll drop the link into the interview into the description for all you guys who are listening or watching who want to give it a read. I'm really happy for Oba. It ended badly at Arsenal, obviously, and I think Mikel Arteta was definitely right to do what he did, but I still felt sorry for him after that. Obviously, he went to Barcelona, it was going well. And then, like you said, the Chelsea thing kind of came out of the blue, really. He never got the impression he wanted to leave Barca. Then he goes to Chelsea, Tuchel leaves straight away. And then I'll always remember that game when it was, which match was it? Well, I can't remember what the score was. Was it? He had about sort of 12 touches combined over the two games, didn't he? Mm. It was a 1-0 at Stamford Bridge. I can't remember what the score was.
And the 3-1 at the Emirates.
Yeah, it was the 3-1.
Managed to bait.
I was so sorry for him standing there, and you could see he was just kind of looking around the stadium when the angel was singing at the beginning, and the camera zoomed in on him, and he just thought, it's a shame that it's kind of ended like this for Auburn Arsenal. So I'm glad he's got his spark back, and he's.
And I have to say, I think you have to be quite careful how you're asking questions about Arsenal, but I think, you know, there are still players in that squad that he feels a real affinity to, and I can say for a fact, he's over the moon with what's happening at Arsenal right now, which is nice to hear, frankly, because, yeah, everything you said, he deserved Mikel Arteta made the right decision, but, you know, it was a sad decision, as everyone involved with it said.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, like you said, he's happy with what's going on at Arsenal, and he should be. I mean, three games to go. It's May now. We're in May, and Arsenal got a real chance of winning the title, which is just a lovely thing to say, isn't it? Obviously, they need someone to do them a favour, or they need Manchester City to trip themselves up at some point over the next few weeks. But they've given themselves a real, real chance, and that's a great thing. Before we go into that, I really wanted to speak to you about, obviously, you've got your Saudi Arabia hat on, the expert. You have your Saudi Arabia expert badge on. Now, Edu's been away to Saudi Arabia for talks with people over there. Not supposedly for out and out transfer talks involving any individuals at this point or anything like that, but just trying to sort of build the connections, which I think, you know, every sporting director needs to do, I suppose, because, you know, Saudi Arabian league's not going away, and there's a real market there for clubs to do trading and to do business. So you can understand sporting directors trying to build up connections and build up contacts over there. So obviously you've got your ear to the ground when it comes to Saudi Arabia. What do you make of Edu's recent trip, and what do you sort of think it might well mean for Arsenal for potentially even this summer?
I mean, really interesting, first of all, but I think one thing that maybe hasn't been reported so far on this front and that's worth sort of flagging up is, I think it would be fair to say that Edu has some work to do with some people around the Pro League, just building back some good feelings. I know people think, oh, Arsenal haven't done this business with Saudi Arabia, but I mean, going way back to, was it January 2022? I think it was. Yeah, it must have been. When Al Nassr came in with a loan offer for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, I know Al Nassr were very unhappy with the way in which Arsenal handled that. You know, Al Nassr will say, well, we never even got a reply to the loan move. Now, they were busy trying to sort of convince Oba to go. We know that didn't happen. And, you know, they were looking for the European move, got one with Barcelona. But I think Al Nassr felt like Arsenal never really came to the table. Arsenal never really helped to facilitate that move at a time when they were desperate to move Aubameyang out of the club. And so, I mean, it's worth noting in the 2.5 years since, a lot has changed around the Saudi Arabian Pro League. Al Nassr is now owned by PIF, which obviously also owns Al Hilal and other clubs. But I think to an extent, and maybe there will be some that will dispute this, but to an extent, work was needed to just smooth some edges from that Aubameyang deal. And it's really the only time that Arsenal have had this direct club-to-club contact, as far as I'm aware, with clubs in Saudi Arabia. There was obviously interest in Nicolas Pepe and Thomas Partey, last summer. But the way the Saudis did business with everyone was to start on the agent. I mean, it's the way all football clubs do business now, isn't it? You start with the agent, you sell the vision to them, you get, you know, a sense of the financial terms and maybe even the transfer fee and go from there. And obviously with Partey, the reply was quite quickly, thanks, but no thanks. And with Pepe, kind of the reasons that move never took off were more from the player's side than Arsenal's side. And Arsenal would have kind of done what they could have to facilitate that deal had it, you know, in Saudi Arabia, had it come to light. The interesting part is obviously, like, if you think the sort of players that clubs are usually looking to sell to Saudi Arabia, Arsenal only have one of them, Thomas Partey. Does he go? The challenge is going to be that Saudi Arabia have expanded the number of international places, but it's still only two more. And they are predominantly, from what I'm told, looking for younger talent, you know, the sort that can thrive in this league and doesn't treat it as a retirement home. That and superstars. Does Partey qualify as a superstar? Maybe not. I would think there will be interest in Partey, but like, everything I keep hearing about the Saudi Pro League is don't expect what you saw last summer. There will not be these mega deals upon mega deals for players that don't kind of move the needle from a brand perspective, from, you know, getting eyeballs on the league, which I'm sure there's been disappointment about. So, I mean, we have to assume it's about Partey. Maybe it's about players that could come on loan, but I doubt it, from Saudi Arabia. But yeah, you have to assume it's about Partey. And it will be interesting to see. I don't think he's kind of going to be at the top of some club's list, but talented player, probably could settle in Saudi Arabia. And there's been dialogue in the past, so wouldn't rule that out.
Yeah. I think, like you kind of said, I think probably the main focus of the visit was to just build those relationships, I think, because I think it's just really interesting how they're obviously now suddenly a major player in football that's come out of the blue, really, in the last few years. And so all these clubs have to go up and build these connections, build these contacts with them, and because they are a possible trade partner in the future, even if it isn't this summer for Arsenal. Like you said, you look at that current squad that Arsenal have, and probably Partey is the only one that you would think interest might come in for in the summer from Saudi, or certainly interest that they Arsenal would entertain. Obviously, we know what happened with Gabriel last summer, and wouldn't at all surprise me if something like that happened again and they try and come in for Gabriel, who we know Arsenal are in very, very early stages of talking to about a potential new contract. So there might be some unwanted interest from Saudi and some of Arsenal's players, but in terms of the ones Arsenal would welcome, you can't really look beyond Thomas Partey.
Jesus, maybe?
Yeah, Jesus. I mean, that's interesting. We'll talk about Jesus a little bit, but I mean, that is interesting, isn't it? When you sort of look at where Arsenal, if they are really open to selling or keen on selling even, where could he potentially go? And you think that he might be an appealing option for some of the clubs over there. So it's him, obviously, Elneny could potentially go over there, but that's not going to be anything to do with Arsenal because that'd be a free transfer if it were to happen. So yeah, interesting one and interesting story, definitely, I think, as we head towards the summer. I can't believe the transfer window is not far away now. That is pretty mad. It's only felt like January's window shut like the other day, and now suddenly we've got the main one, the summer one, coming, which is just 4 months or 3 months of craziness. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, Thomas Partey is certainly an interesting one. Jorginho, what do you make of the fact that it looks like he's gonna sign a new contract now? It's certainly heading in the right direction when it comes to Jorginho, and contract has been offered and Arsenal expecting it to sign. That was reported yesterday by David Ornstein over at The Athletic. Good move, smart move, I think so.
Yeah, it's absolutely worth doing. We discussed this when he was really in his prime form a few weeks ago, and that tailed off a little bit since then. But even then, you know, you're maybe just getting a sort of average Jorginho game, which is keep it tight, keep it steady, maybe not have as many touches and not really dictate the game. But he's, you know, he is that sort of Monreal-esque Mr. 7 out of 10 at least every single week. And I think coupled with that, it's just a game that you feel like it will age really well. He's played so well when Arsenal have been in the Champions League in particular. He's so, I mean, you know, he's one of those players around the squad that Arteta leans on, that the other younger players lean on for advice. And we know, you know, he's been working hard on his coaching badges and all that. And he's probably going to be a top manager from the sounds of it, from what people tell me about him as a coach. So in the end, you can't have any real complaints. And I think he's merited a new contract and, you know, to be paid well for the twilight of his career. And, you know, if in year two of that deal, if when it all gets ironed out, he's not actually even a playing member of the squad, he's not so expensive and not so, you know, difficult that you wouldn't mind just having him around, in the same way that it's never been a burden having Mo Elneny around.
Mm. Do you sort of see a possibility of both Jorginho and Partey still being at Arsenal next year? Or do you think if one stays, the other will end up going?
I certainly see the possibility because as great as Thomas Partey was at the weekend and as great as he was against Chelsea, he needs to prove to any club that's sort of thinking about taking on his wages, whatever they are, that they are going to get value for money from that, from those, what will still be significant wages. And not only do I see a possibility, I really wouldn't rule it out yet. I think we saw with Partey last summer when Arsenal were open quite early on to doing business, that business never materialized. And that was before he then missed most of the season. Like, I think we underrate, you know, in the football world, we underrate just how much clubs look at the injury records of players and go, yikes, we don't want to spend huge amounts of money on a player that we are getting nothing from on the pitch. And I don't know how Partey can prove that. That's the other real challenge. Is even if he plays 90 minutes in Arsenal's final three games, so they're a week apart, you know, a Juventus or whoever, well, maybe not Juventus, but, you know, some of those clubs would look at it and go, you know, he's missed too much football. And it'd be a hard sell. And I don't see Arsenal getting huge money for him if he does go.
No, absolutely not. But I mean, I'd keep him, to be honest. If you're not going to get a decent bit of money for him, and when I say decent, like you said, it's not going to be huge amounts, but if you know, someone's offering 10, 15 million or something like that for Partey, then maybe you look at it. But otherwise, I'd just keep him around. I think he's still got, you know, a year left on his contract. Just keep him for that year, see what the availability is like. If it's, you know, if it's the same as this season, obviously he just goes on a free at the end of it. But if not, then you'd hopefully get still a decent amount of football out of him next season. I can't imagine it's going to be as bad next season as it was this season. You know, as obviously his availability hasn't been great since he arrived at Atletico, but he's had nothing like this season before, has he? And so you would hope next season, even if he is out a couple of times, he's still largely available for a large chunk of it. And look, when Thomas Partey's fit and available, as he's shown in the last couple of weeks, he's still a hugely important player in this team. And if you've got him around in the squad next season, and you've got Jorginho around, you've got Declan Rice around, and you've got another midfielder around that you've probably added in the summer, then that's a very nice bunch of options to use and rotate for Mikel Arteta going forward. And I think that has to be the aim at the end of this transfer window, is that the squad is just taken up to an even higher level than it is now. And that would certainly do that.
Yes. Sorry, I didn't realize there was a question for me there, because
No, there wasn't. It was just come on, fill the air, James, fill the dead air.
We've got to leave these gaps for ads, Charles. We've got to monetize our dead air.
Okay, I'll do that. I'll just put in a very conveniently placed ad on YouTube. Not that will help for the podcast listeners. We touched on Gabriel Jesus earlier, and obviously James McNicholas has written a story in the last couple of days over at Athletic. I spoke about it in today's show, and it's a really interesting one in how, you know, as much as he's been such a big part of this kind of rebuild under Arteta in the last couple of years, and how, you know, remember last year, the way he came in, burst out of the blocks, was so, so good in those first few months, and he changed the world, changed our world, as Arteta said. But now, according to James, the Arsenal are going to be would consider selling him again if a decent offer comes in. They're not going to push him out the door or anything, but if a decent offer comes in, he might be someone that they consider to cash in on. Does that surprise you at all? And what are your thoughts on Jesus in terms of where he is right now in his Arsenal career?
I mean, I'll be honest, it did. I mean, you know, I've been kind of going back to the top of the show. I've been out of the loop a little bit for the last few weeks, which I've really enjoyed. So I hadn't necessarily even heard many rumblings. And I think it felt very carefully phrased, and I can't speak for James, but I do know sometimes when you write pieces like this, you want to be very careful about saying something like, you know, Arsenal would entertain interest that came their way. It's certainly not the same as sort of actively putting him out on the market, but it is an indication to the wider market that Jesus would be available if people want to come and have that conversation. And like I say, you know, player on £250,000 a week with sketchy injury history, you maybe do need to get it to places like Saudi Arabia to try and push that interest. What's so strange, though, is it really feels like, and you were at the presser, weren't you, when Jesus spoke to us and effectively said, you know, my knee is still busted, and then went and said afterwards, I probably need to have a knee operation this summer. It feels like what we've seen this season is, and ever since the World Cup, is Gabriel Jesus on one knee. And what Arsenal were privy to that we aren't is his medical records and the prospect that that might be fixed. You know, is there an operation that can be done in the summer that will get Gabriel Jesus physically to the level he was when he arrived at Arsenal? If there is, you know, everything opens up at this football club. You can, you know, if you could convince me for certain that Gabriel Jesus is coming back, I'd be like, no, you don't need to buy another striker. You've got your number nine. You've got Kai Havertz. You've got everything you need in that position. But, you know, injuries have dogged him at Arsenal, and they dogged him a little bit before at Manchester City as well. So, you know, like we sort of said about Partey, one of the best abilities is availability. Mm. And Arsenal have really missed, even with Kai Havertz there, Arsenal have missed having that sort of Tyro centre forward, someone that can drift wide, can interplay with a Martinelli. I don't think, you know, when everyone talks about what's been wrong with Martinelli, I don't think that it's helped that Jesus hasn't been around when they had such a good tandem. So, yeah, it's really tough. Until you know what sort of Jesus you'll have next season, I think almost everything's in flux, because he would be the perfect third or fourth guy in the attack. And if he ever got back to the level of fitness he had early on, he could be a starting striker for a Premier League winner. I mean, we've seen it with City.
And he was so good. He was so good in that run up to the World Cup. You know, unbelievably good. Like, you know, it was mad watching him, just how different he made Arsenal, having him in there, having him, you know, we've been used to kind of Lacazette, hadn't we, up to that point. And then Jesus came in, and that, it was just a breath of fresh air watching him play, and the quality he had, the goals he was scoring, the goals he was assisting, the runs, the skip. It was just brilliant to watch. But he just has not looked like that since the World Cup. The movement, the pace, it just doesn't seem to be there. And you can imagine that is because he's just basically struggling with this injury, that he's just playing through the pain. He hasn't actually missed that many games this season.
Mm.
But he doesn't look the same, does he? With the way he runs, everything about him, it just doesn't look like the Jesus we saw in those first few months before he picked up the injury. It's interesting. Arsenal put an interview with him out today on the website. I think it's part of the programme for the Bournemouth game this weekend. You know, they sometimes put mm-hmm. one of the long read interviews out. And there's a question in there. I've just got it here on the screen. It says, how have you dealt with the injuries this season? Was the question. He says, look, it's tough. I've loved playing football since I was 3 years old. So being injured is hard. Last season, I think I played my best 6 months before the World Cup, when I got my knee injury, and everyone knows what happened afterwards. This season has been tough. I missed pre-season, had surgery again, then had a couple more injuries. I'm doing my best to help the team and hoping to stay fit so I can do a full pre-season this summer. Then it's a different story, which I thought was quite interesting. Obviously, just really, really targeting a proper pre-season to get himself fit and going for the start of the new season, because he didn't have that last year, didn't he? Did he? Just before the season, they decided to do that operation. Which I don't know. I remember asking Arteta at Colney a couple of months back about that and saying, given what's happened with Jesus, has that operation just not worked? And he tried to say that it had. And I said, are you probably going to have to revisit it this summer? And he said no. But obviously, Gabriel Jesus has since said that it might well be the case. So we'll have to wait and see. But you know, if he could stay fit and could get a proper full pre-season under his belt this season, you know, I wouldn't be, he's not a player that I'd be pushing out the door. Gabriel Jesus, if, and it is a big if, obviously, that he just does get back to full fitness, because he's just such a good footballer. And I think if you got rid of Jesus as well, you'd have to basically buy two forwards, wouldn't you, this summer? Because look, Eddie's going to go. Well, we think Eddie's going to go. I'd be surprised if he doesn't. And if Jesus goes on top of that, even if you've got Kai Havertz there and you decide he's going to be a number nine, I still think you probably need two more attackers if you're getting rid of Nketiah and Jesus in the same window. Do you really want to sign two forwards in the same window when you've got to sign probably a midfielder and maybe a defender as well as paying the money to sign David Raya?
And with the sort of possible exception of Trossard, who I don't think is quite the same player, you would, you losing Jesus would rob you of a sort of interior dribbler, so to speak. You know, I know there are players that can carry the ball, but you just think even this sort of Crocs Jesus that we've been describing, when he came on in the first leg against Bayern Munich, he just gave Arsenal something that no one else in that 11 was offering, which was that he could take the ball, beat two men. And that, even Saka and Ødegaard, it's a different sort of beating men, isn't it? It's, you know, blowing past them on the flank. And I think Arsenal would really miss a player with his central qualities, his ability to drop deep, play as a false nine. And, you know, when he's fully fit, no one was ever saying, oh, he doesn't get into the box enough. And I think it's just, it'd be so hard to replace. And, you know, you'd need then a real high-grade number nine, having already spent that money. This was the thing we said about Aubameyang and Lacazette. You've spent the money on the superstar nine, and now you're having to do it again. I know there's, you know, there will have been 2 years between those transfers, but it's really suboptimal to be doing that sort of twice if you want to buy a high-grade rival for Martinelli and Saka as well. So you do almost have to sort of hold your nerve a bit maybe and hope that the operation is a success, which if that's what happens. And I think the priority right now should be like, what can we do to make Gabriel Jesus the best physical version of himself that we can make?
Yeah, see, that's what I think. I think that should be the priority. I'm just not sure selling him, unless they know he's absolutely crocked and there's no coming back from it, then obviously that changes things. But if there is a hope that an operation is going to be able to get him back to what he was, then I'd be putting all my eggs in that basket rather than moving him on. He was an unused substitute. Obviously, he didn't even come off the bench against Spurs at the weekend. It's a brilliant game. Unbelievable. And there is no more chaotic match in football, certainly in English football, I don't think, than North London Derby. And that, well, there hasn't been in the last 10 years, 15 years. It's just such a crazy match year after year after year. And this one was chaos and then some. I have to say, did you? I take it you watched it, didn't you?
Oh, we were there.
Yeah, of course, we were there. I was talking to you in the press room before the game. What were we talking about?
Yeah, it was my first day.
You sat right behind me on my left, weren't you? Of course you were. I mean, it was just such a mental, crazy game, wasn't it? Absolutely mad.
I was sat next to Amy Lawrence, so I have to credit her for this line. And obviously, she was there in 2004, and the celebrations at the final whistle, I was sort of saying to her, like, Amy, the away end, apologies to anyone in the away end, but it looks quite subdued for what we've just seen. But I think there was that just sort of like, and she sort of said, actually, it was quite similar at White Hart Lane in 2004, because there was a little bit of like, oh my God, what did we just do? Like, partly the sort of sheer overwhelming emotion of doing something quite spectacular at the other team's ground, and also doing it in such a haphazard way and nearly spoiling your big day. There were those sort of real similarities, and it was absolutely brilliant. I love everything about it. I love how the North London Derby can give you these stupid storylines that run for days on days. It's Thursday, and all we're talking about is Ben White sort of with the slightest grazing of Vicario's gloves.
I'm going to stop you there. I'm going to stop you there because I want to talk about that properly in a minute.
We'll come on to that.
So let's wait. Let's quickly just talk about the game before we move on to that. Because
one size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
We were talking about Jesus being an unused substitute. Kai Havertz obviously is keeping Jesus out of the team at the moment, deservedly so as well. And there's so many times this season I've said to myself, oh, that's Havertz's best game in an Arsenal shirt. I thought he was so, so good in this game. It was an absolute masterclass of a number nine performance. Obviously, he scored an assist, but just his hold-up play, you know, the link-up play, the strength, the problems he caused Tottenham. This was a proper performance from Kai Havertz. It's just so mad, isn't it? If you go back to the start of the season, those first couple of months, if you'd have predicted at that point that Havertz would basically be spearheading Arsenal's charge towards the title come the end of the season, we'd have all just said, no, it's just absolutely no chance. But he really, really is. I mean, the numbers that he's produced in the last few months since this sort of move to the number nine role has just been incredible. And just seeing him play now, the confidence he's playing with, the belief he's playing with, it's just fantastic to see. And I thought he was so, so good in that game.
I loved his performance. Actually, only in a purely aesthetic way of how long has it been, with the odd exception, since Arsenal have had a striker. I suppose Olivier Giroud is the one that I was thinking was the exception, who just loves to go slamming into the back of, you know, into defenders with his back. And Havertz, from minute one, he was living for those aerial duels, and it's unlocked so much of Arsenal. And what was the best bits of that first half, which you and I disagreed on, I thought Arsenal were quite good. I kind of think maybe watching it back the second time around, they weren't as good as I thought. But with Havertz at number nine, you unlock this team, especially then with Partey as your six. You unlock a team that can break the press, and Spurs' press was good, really good. Oh. They can break your press because Partey can pick the ball up and send James Maddison falling to the... Although maybe James Maddison was just diving, because he does seem to enjoy that. There might be some contact in this. Or they can slam it right over you, and Kai Havertz, even against these big burly centre-backs like Romero, he can give you a really good chance of winning. And Arsenal are the best team in England, maybe the best team in Europe at getting second balls. He's brilliant. I love Havertz. It's fantastic. I mean, I think all these questions all along about whether he's a nine, whether he's a 10, he's both. He's a true number nine, but he's also someone that can drop off the front line and play that sort of pass to Bukayo Saka.
So are we still saying then that he's not an eight, though? Because obviously he was signed as an eight, and yet now he's a nine. You're saying there he can play as a 10. You know, what does this mean for Arsenal going forward? I've got a question here, actually. I'm going to bring this forward because it's worth asking now as we're talking about it. It's from Danny. He says, hi, Charles James. Huge fan of the show. I can't help but romanticise at the prospect of Kai remaining as our go-to centre-forward for next year. The technical ability, intelligence, pressing and combination play at just 24 makes me think he can be special for us. What are your thoughts on keeping him there and signing a young striker like Sesko, who we can nurture, and a winger who can add to the goals instead? So obviously there's been lots of talk in the build-up to the summer out how Arsenal are going to sign a forward. That's what we're all expecting to happen. But what Kai's doing now, the way he's playing... Do you see a future where Arsenal start next season with Kai Havertz as their number nine?
Yeah, for sure. Not least because I think when we sort of talk about, say, someone like Sesko, he might actually just be the best option on the market as well. And for all that people like Mikel Arteta love to tell you, oh, look, our plans are formed and we know exactly what we're going to do, a lot of it inherently has to be reactive to what the transfer market says. And right now the every word I'm hearing is there's just maybe not going to be that superstar striker that fits Arsenal and lands on the market. So yeah, you do the move as Danny here's suggesting, of picking up a Sesko, picking up a young striker who will still be expensive, but a young moldable striker, using the money you save maybe to add a winger. And I think you can then be pretty ultra confident that the goals will come, especially if, like, let's assume in this case we're saying Jesus is there as well. You've given yourself a pretty formidable attacking group there. I like that as a plan more than hurling crazy amounts at a striker that you might have any doubts about.
I'm just counting up now. I think he's got 9 goals in about the last 14 games in all comps for Arsenal.
I think he's in the sort of top five for non-penalty goals since the turn of the year. I hadn't even checked since he went to centre-forward. But he's scoring goals, and he's got 5 assists as well.
Yeah, he's got assists as well. I mean, it was brilliant assist for Bukayo's goal at the weekend as well. I just think it's really interesting. You're talking there sort of about reacting to the transfer market and how you have to react to it, but you also probably, you have to react to what your team is currently doing as well, and what your players are currently doing and how they're developing. And at the moment, what Havertz seems to be doing is developing into a top-class central striker. That even if Arsenal did have this firm idea, which they probably did have in terms of who they wanted in the summer and what they were going to do, does the form of some of a certain player, can that absolutely just change what maybe you've been spending the last 6 months planning towards? Because you think, hold on, we just don't need to do this now because this is where we're going to play him. But then again, also, and I'm rambling a bit here on it, but if you are then going to play him as a central striker and that's what you decide on, obviously you brought him in as a midfielder. So that means you've got to maybe rethink what your long-term plans were for the midfield if you're going to suddenly play him as a striker. So it's really, really interesting what this current run of form for him might well mean for Arsenal in terms of the transfer market.
And you've got to be careful not to have my sort of final word on it, but you've got to be careful not to get a sort of case of the Walcotts where in April, May of every year you go, okay, Theo Walcott could be our number nine. And then Arsene Wenger watches him in pre-season and concludes he couldn't. You know, I think the advantage with Havertz is he's played this long enough that I feel like I've seen enough, and I'm sure Arteta's seen a lot more. That you know now whether he is or he isn't. I think you have to be careful not to let the immediate cloud your judgment, but it's been long enough that I think we can say with confidence that he's a decent number nine. He was a decent number nine for Chelsea, just in a rubbish team.
Yeah. I think the good thing is, as well, and the way Arsenal built their squad is because of how versatile pretty much all of the players are, that you can just chop and change game by game, week by week, depending on the opposition and depending on injuries, and move him up front 1 week, back into midfield another week. And no matter what you do in the transfer market, you've still got that option. I wonder if Mikel's just sort of sitting there laughing to himself at how many people doubted him over Kai Havertz in the summer, including us, because I remember we both... Mm-hmm. And just laughing to himself now about him. He's just been nominated for the Player of the Month for the Premier League, Havertz as well, actually, which wouldn't surprise me at all if he wins.
Yeah, that's Cole Palmer's winning that.
Oh, of course, yeah, I hadn't thought Cole Palmer.
Takes all the penalties, mate.
Did he score a penalty in the four when he scored four in one game?
Can't remember. Oh, he must have.
I remember him scoring that lovely lob in that game. Right. Ben White. Honestly, I've had a bit of a rant about this on my show this morning, so I wanted to speak to you about it more than me just ranting about the same thing again. But I genuinely can't believe this is actually still a talking point, like you said, about 4 or 5 days after the transfer window. I loved Ange's comments in his press conference yesterday, but he's just like, I don't care. I really don't care. So why does everyone else care? He literally tapped Vicario's glove for a second. He wasn't trying to undo the glove. He just tapped his glove for a second. I mean, how much stuff goes on in penalty areas week after week? And how I just don't get how Ben White has suddenly become this focal point for what he does when everyone does things. I mean, look at the Champions League game the other day at Bayern Munich versus Real Madrid, with Jude Bellingham going up and having a word in Harry Kane's ear as he was about to take the penalty. Everyone was laughing about that, you know, over here about it. It's like, oh, look at Jude trying to disrupt things and put off his England teammates, sort of laughing about it. And yet this... it's being picked upon and analysed in so much great depth. I don't get it. What are your thoughts on it all?
I think there is a state now where Ben White has, you know, I want to be very careful because I wouldn't necessarily refer to individual journalists. And I thought it was really interesting, Gary Jacob, for instance, just asking a question about, is this going to be allowed to happen? But I think the fact that this is Ben White and he's become something of a whipping boy for some in the newspaper world, because he's had the temerity to not want to play for England. I think that is a factor, I have to say it. And, you know, you see some of the stuff that people like Matthew Syed are saying, and you know that if it was a cyclist doing this or a table tennis player, he'd be coming out with all this nonsense about marginal gains, but because it's a footballer, and it's so nonsensical, not least because... if the referee has a problem with this, then the referee can blow up for it. And I think one of the interesting things about Arsenal's set-piece tactics is I find they don't work as well in Europe because Champions League referees, for whatever reason, are really laser-focused on this. And I know White has given away a lot of fouls at corner kicks in the Champions League. It's, you know, if the referee has seen this and doesn't really care, then it kind of comes down to Spurs to... do things like employ a set piece coach or employ someone who will say, if Ben White is annoying Vicario, you go and annoy Ben White and you clear him away from Vicario so that Vicario can get a clean run at the ball. It's what Arsenal will do all the time. They will make sure that David Raya is in a position where he can spring forward and jump higher than anyone else and catch the ball. Like, defend your set pieces, Ange. I mean, it's bizarre. He talks about this all the time. Like, I'm trying to fix Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. I don't have time to to coach set pieces. You know, you can hire someone to do that for you. That's my Spurs rant. I know people don't want much of that. Like, it is widely known. Referees know that they need to keep an eye on people like Ben White, because Ben White is going to operate on the limits of the laws for corner kicks. The referees will have seen it. They don't care. I think it's incredibly funny. I really like what White's doing there, because it's just winding up your opponent a bit. Exactly. And I wish everyone had...
I can understand if it was constant fouling and that he was getting away, if I can understand it, but he's just not doing anything illegal there. So what's the issue? I don't get how it's...
I wish we had the same energy.
Did you see when Vicario came up in the last minute?
Did the same thing.
And literally went straight up to David Raya and started barging him. Like, that was far more than what Ben White is doing here, and yet no one has any sort of issue with it. And, you know, people have pinned goalkeepers back, pinned defenders back, and blocked defenders off for forever when it comes to set pieces. It's not anything new, and it just seems really odd that it's just getting analysed so heavily. And I wonder if it's going to have an influence in terms of how refs are going to sort of see Arsenal over the next, certainly the next three games of the season or beyond, if they're going to have to stop doing this sort of stuff and move Ben White away. But Vicario, you know, Arsenal, as you said, would have analysed, and they didn't even need to do that much analysing to work out that Vicario is not great when corners get put under his, you know, on the sort of 6-yard box. He's shown that already this season. It's an area that not just Arsenal are going to target, but lots of teams have targeted with him, and they did that. And they did it very well, and it's Tottenham's fault. It was absolutely... I mean, the defending for Kai Havertz's goal was so bad from that set piece. It landed about 3 yards out. He didn't even have to jump in the centre of the goal, and there was no one on him. And Vicario still standing there in the 6-yard box. He was so weak from them. And that's got to be the focus, I think, rather than Ben White literally touching a guy's glove at the start of it all.
And let's, you know, if we're talking about off-ball incidents that really need to be clamped down... I don't want to make too big a deal out of it, but what Richarlison did to Gabriel after kickoff for the second goal, like, why are we not, even in a derby, why are we not sanctioning someone for doing that? He ran straight at him, effectively a sort of rugby tackle without your arms wrapped around them, which is a foul in rugby and a yellow card. And then just that was pathetic from Richarlison, and that's the sort of stuff I'd like to see officials clamping down on. Not, you know, the dark arts at set pieces.
No, I mean, God, Arsenal have been very, very fortunate in the last few weeks to not have serious injuries to Tomiyasu and to Kai Havertz for a couple of dreadful tackles in a game against Wolves and against Chelsea. Mm. And there's just been not a word said about that or discussed about that. And yet you're spending so much time talking about Ben White at a corner. Priorities. I just don't understand it. But anyway, look, before we wrap this up, we've got a couple more questions that we will bring up now. There's one here from Neil. Now, Marcus Rashford's obviously in the headlines at the moment. There's been potential stories about widespread sort of fire sales at Manchester United. Rashford potentially going if a good offer comes in. Arsenal in the lookout for a forward who can play out wide. And Neil Watson, Walston, sorry, says, what do we think of Rashford as a new striker stroke winger? Is that in any way realistic or even desirable? I spoke about this in my Caught Offside column, actually. They asked me for my sort of thoughts on it. And I was just like, about a year, probably 18 months ago, I'd have been all for this. But I think Rashford's a really, really good player. But I think given how much he would probably cost and given what his wages are, it doesn't feel like one that I would be too keen on Arsenal pursuing. Not that I think they will, but in terms of just my opinion, I don't think I'd be too keen on it. What about you?
Yeah, I'm not bothered at all. I think he's a great guy, but I think as a footballer, he's struggled a lot over the last few years. I think that's probably Manchester United more than Rashford, but he's been there long enough that I don't think he can sort of get out of that rut like Sancho did.
He screams like a player, though, Rashford, of needing to get out. It just screams of, I feel like he would go out and be good somewhere. He's a really good player. He's shown that at Man United. And I feel like if he could escape the madness of United and clearly a manager that I don't think he wants to play for or respects, that I think he'd do, you know, I think he could do really, really good things somewhere. But I just think financially it's too much. It'd be too much of a sort of gamble for Arsenal.
Yeah, exactly. Sancho, talk to me.
Played well last night, didn't he? Played well last night.
Not quite what Arsenal need, I think. But you know, if someone wanted to loan him for nothing, I'd love that.
Yeah. Well, when you say he's not quite what Arsenal need, I mean, they need a winger, don't they? Need a winger.
I think they need more pace, but he's very good at beating players.
Mm. Well, he certainly was good at beating who was the fullback last night? Who
did
he?
Nuno Mendes.
Luka Mendes. Yeah. Must have nightmares over it. I don't know how that game finished 1-0, by the way. The amount of good chances in that game. Unbelievably poor. Oh,
what
finishing.
A game.
It was a really good game. The finishing was absolutely dreadful, though. You know, it could have easily been 3-3 that game. It was both semi-finals were really, really good, actually, and both really evenly poised going into the second leg. I was watching the Munich Madrid game, though, and I was just sitting there thinking, oh my God, I should be at the Emirates right now watching Arsenal versus Madrid. I just couldn't get that thought out of my mind watching that match against Bayern. I wish we could have those two legs again and play them again. I really do, because I think 8 times out of 10 Arsenal go through over two legs against that Bayern team. I really do.
And I think they'd have a great chance against Madrid as well, yeah. Who I didn't think were all that.
No, I think it's a missed opportunity, this Champions League. Right, a couple more now. Got one from Andrew here. Says, extra time. Thoughts on giving Chido Obi Martin a quick run out like Wanyeri had, just to see where he stands right now. Also, any thoughts on the leaked designs for next year's home and away kits? We'll start on Chido Obi Martin. Now, we were sitting in the press room, actually, talking about it.
We know where he stands.
Before the game as well, weren't we? And I mean, it's genuinely mad, the numbers that he's serving up at the moment for the under-18s. And it's really interesting, I think. And I'm thinking that I'm hopefully, if I get everything I need to get done tomorrow, I'm going to go to the press conference. And I was in my mind, I'm thinking I might ask Mikel something about Obi Martin, because I'm really interested in at what part of his development does Arteta sort of start to really sort of focus in on him. Obviously, he's only 16 at the moment. He's playing for the under-18s. But how... I'm really interested to know just how central Arteta already is to sort of help him map out his development and how far away he potentially might be. Because, see, Wanyeri got a run out at 15. Martin's now 16, not too far off turning 17. Physically, you know, he's a big guy. So it'd be really interesting. I mean, he hasn't signed his first pro contract yet. Wanyeri hadn't. And you think that's probably quite a big reasoning for Arteta playing him as a 15-year-old was to give him that first little taste before he signed that contract. It'd be interesting if he might force his way in. I think in the summer we might see a bit of him, maybe in the preseason.
I was thinking the tour, yeah. I mean, we know where he stands, doesn't it? It's about a foot above everyone else.
He does stand about a foot above. I drew the comparison when I was talking about him a couple of days ago to J. Emmanuel Thomas back then, you know, when he was coming through the youth team. Yeah. Arsenal, he was just scoring so many goals and just... physically, he was so much stronger and bigger than everyone else, and it was kind of like school playground stuff when you're watching him play. And I whenever I watch Martin at the moment, it just takes me back to that big guy in the playground who is just better and stronger than everyone else. You could just run past them, and it just feels like he's too big, too strong, too good for under-18s already. So what's the point in him still playing under-18s football? So yeah, I'm really interested in what Arsenal kind of think and what the plan is for his development over the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? I mean, obviously we're way off even thinking about loan moves because he hasn't signed that pro contract yet. But yeah, it's hard to assess people when the physical qualities they have put them miles ahead of the players they're playing against, because that just isn't going to be true when you move up to professional football. Maybe it'll still be true in 21s, 23s, I don't know. I'm going to answer the other one as well, on the home and away kits. I don't like blue on an Arsenal home kit. No. It just, like, no. I feel like the black kit with the cannon and the green is just a bit of a cop-out. Like, the green and red are being wasted a bit there. I love the third kit. Give me five things of that third kit, please.
You obviously love the third kit.
I love it.
Third kit. Why?
It's just fresh. It's fresh and clean.
Oh, it's not fresh. It's meh. Is what it is. I don't. What even is it? What color is that?
Toothpaste.
Exactly.
Electric. They will call it something like sunset toothpaste.
No, I'm not having that third kit. I don't like any of them, to be honest. I think the home kit sort of mocked up on that mannequin there, I think actually looks bearable, but I just don't like them. I don't like any of them. I'm not a fan. The away kit I think could have been nice, but I don't like the fact that the Adidas symbol and the cannon are different colours. I just think that they should have been the same colour. I don't know why it needed the whatever that grey and white sort of camo style is in those patches. I just don't like it. Don't like any of them. I have to say, I'm not a fan.
No, not even going to get you in that third kit.
Definitely not going to get me.
They call it the trefoil, don't they? The Adidas badge that way. Which I appreciate is useless for people on podcasts, but it's more of the sort of leisure wear version of the Adidas logo that I'm all about.
I don't know. I'll probably end up shelling out God knows how much for my kids to get a couple of them. I don't know which ones they're leaving.
Do they get like, cause obviously I guess you have the challenge of them growing selfishly. Do they get home and away every year, or do they have to pick a kit every season?
Luke, my son has got the horrendous luminous one this season, which he loved. Although the fact that we win in that every time we play it has softened my hatred for it a little bit, and I wish we'd played in that in the away game at Bayern. I don't know why we played in the green kit against Bayern, even though I like that kit. And my daughter's got the green kit actually, so they pick one each season, and I don't know which one they're going to choose from this one. But I'm sure I'll reluctantly part of the cash to get whatever it is that they want. But yeah, not a fan, I have to say.
Yeah, my nephew still hasn't even worn his kit that I got him at Christmas, which is abysmal. I'm starting to worry that he won't be a gooner.
Which one? Which kit?
The baby kit. Sort it out.
It's a challenge, honestly. Getting my kids to commit to Arsenal is a challenge. Just sort of constantly fighting all their little mates in the playground who want to support Manchester City, even though they live down here, because Man City are winning everything. And they're all.
But now those kids are going Arsenal now. They're thinking, we need to get on that bandwagon early.
That'll be good, 100%. But yeah, the Messi and Ronaldo, they're all obsessed with Messi and Ronaldo. They're all obsessed with players rather than teams. It's really weird. It's completely different to when we were kids. But anyway, look, perfect. Where are you this weekend?
I'm at the carpet.
You're at the carpet, yeah. I will be there, not in the press box, though. I'm in my seat. I'm in the...
Have you decided for the final day if... do you want to be sort of positioned... Obviously, the joy of being in the press box for that is, we have functioning Wi-Fi. It's very easy to know. I mean, you could probably
I'm just sitting in my seat. I'm definitely not in the press box for... if Arsenal go for the title, there's no way I'm sitting in the press box for that.
Don't worry. If Arsenal win the title, I'll be over at your seat via the pitch.
Come and join me for the party. Yeah, no, I'm 100% sitting in the stands for the next two home games. I'm not going to be in the press box for either of those. I'm applied for Man United for the away game, but I don't know if I've got a place yet. But yeah, the two home games, I'll definitely be.
So weird, isn't it?
I know, three games ago, it's mad. Just someone, anyone, just get a point off them. They're not in a far. Honestly, Chris Wood, that man. I was watching. I left Spurs at half time of that game just after Wood had missed the first open goal that he missed in that game. I was walking to the train station just going over it in my head over and over again. It's like, just take a touch, man. He had so much time. He could have taken a touch and just rolled it in. Oh, so frustrating. But anyways, hopefully someone else does us a favour between now and then. Look, cheers for joining me again, James. Appreciate that. Welcome back. Congratulations again.
Good to be back.
On the marriage, and probably won't see you at the weekend, but I will certainly link up next week to do this all over again as we gear up towards that big game at Old Trafford. Everyone else, I'll be back tomorrow for the usual show in the morning. Like I said, I'm hopefully going to be at London Colney for Mikel's presser a little bit later on in the day as well. So follow me for all the live updates from what he has had to say. But until then, have a great weekend, everyone, as we gear up to that game against Bournemouth. James, have a good one, mate. Catch up with you soon.
You too. See you soon.
Bye bye.
Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.